young adults feel a real sense of loss and just kind of ask these big questions in life of who am I? What am I doing? What is my purpose?
Family man, yeah. Welcome to the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. This is the show where we remind dads of what's most important. I'm your host, Scott Moore. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Well, Scott, we are on pins and needles. Pins and needles here at the Wilson household because
no
Sam and McKenna.
Yet?
No baby yet.
No.
I know it. Last week, I said they were overdue. They were due a week ago Monday. So they've passed their due date by a couple days, and they are in the hospital right now. They went in last night at 12 o'clock. Why they haven't gone in at 12 o'clock, I have no idea. But they went in at 12 o'clock to start the induction process, the inducing process, I guess. I guess they get you hooked up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why they do that. Maybe so the doctors can be wide awake when it comes time. Yes. But so they were hoping to, and we haven't heard anything. So no news means no news. But we're all like, come on. You know, every time I woke up last night, which when you're old, you know, you wake up a lot, and I would pray for him. I'm like, dear God, you know, grease the shaft and let it come out easy and help it come quickly. But we are all trusting God for his perfect timing. But I know poor McKenna, she's ready to go. She just looks miserable, you know, like she just looks like she's ready to have a baby. So anyway, so we're waiting on this new boy, this new Wilson boy. We don't know his name yet. They know his name, at least I assume they do. We've kind of tried to, you know, wheedle it out of them, but they're not letting us wheedle. By the way, I don't think we've ever used wheedle before.
That can be a dangerous thing.
Yes,
we've had a couple of families that we know where like the parents of the new baby didn't tell anybody the name until the baby was born, and then like grandma or somebody was like, really, that?
Well, I think in this day and age, they should be expecting that because they're, you know, there are just unique names. I know when Ben and Rissa were first talking about their child, you know, their firstborn, Renly, they were like, some of the names are like, well, we've never heard it as a name before. And I'm like, Muffler? You know,
yes.
Carburetor? Was?
Seven.
So, seven. That's right. Wasn't it, what's his name? Not Tesla, but who owns Tesla? Elon Musk,
yeah.
Who named his son like an unpronounceable A73 and then a digit. Again, wow. I don't know what he did. He named it within last year. I think it was some kind of odd.
Guaranteed to make your child hate you.
I know it. It is kind of like you meet someone with an odd name and you're like, wow. So we're probably good. We're probably good because I think Sam and Ken are good, solid people.
Yes.
So they're not going to do anything too scary, I don't think. But they could just to test us. So.
I'll pray for you guys in case they come out with, look at Moon Unit.
Yeah. Moon Unit. That'd be cool. There you go. This is my grandson, Moon Unit. So anyway, so how about you? Did you have a good Labor Day? Anything exciting, or was it just a nice leisurely time?
It was pretty much a nice leisurely time. Nothing big. I'm still feeling a little, I don't know. It's like I took a step backwards in the recovery process from COVID.
Oh, yeah? Long haul. You can claim that now.
Yeah.
And you probably get government money. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, you know, why stop now?
Is everybody else recovered? Everybody else feeling okay?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's just one of those
annoying things, and I'm tired of talking about it, so I'm sorry I brought it up.
You did bring it up. Well, you know, the good news is people will get tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
You know, your family will say, come on, Dad, it's oh, you're done. Be normal. You know, they just don't care after a while.
And on that note, I did have a wonderful phone call last night with one of our fellow family men. So one of the things he said was that he's like, look, I don't actually know you, but I feel like you and Todd are my friends because I listen to you on the podcast all the time and I know you guys. And I was like, dude, I just want to say this to all the guys listening. That is exactly how I feel about you guys, because I've listened to podcasts for so long and I felt the exact same way. Like, I know these guys don't actually know me, but it feels like we're friends. And
because we are friends, yeah. Scott.
Well, and when we've gotten together, like at the Family Man Rally with these guys, it's like we've been friends for years. You know, you meet one of them, you're like, oh, yeah. You know, like we've emailed and whatever. So please don't feel afraid to talk to us or email us or whatever. It's awesome.
No matter how big Scott gets, he is approachable. That's the great thing about him. That's the great thing about him. He's approachable.
I don't think I could ever possibly like be an egotistical superstar or whatever, even if I got to be like a big rock star or whatever. Hey, my wife would never put up with it, but
oh, sure you could.
I've spent too many years with kids that are like, Dad, you're not that cool. Don't worry.
That is totally true. Well, hey, we have a special guest with us today, David Morgan. David Morgan has written a book called Delivering Your Future, A Call to Abundant Life in College. And David is not only a successful businessman and a great dad, he's my wife's cousin. So he's been my cousin too for you know, 30 plus years. So we are super pleased to have David on the show. Well, hey, David, it's good having you on the show.
It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, David, I've already told him a little bit about your book, but why don't you just begin maybe by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah. So Todd, thanks so much again for having me on the show. Just so appreciate your ministry. You've resonated so much with us for many years and spoken to our employees. And it's just been awesome to be part of your ministry for so many years. So thank you for that first. So a little bit about me. So we have three boys. So it's all hands on deck. The oldest is 16. He's a junior. And then we have a freshman. And then we have a fifth grader, Henry, who is 10. So we are fully engaged, and I am absolutely a family man right now. So it's a good time of life.
In fact, I wish I could show it on my phone right now, but David has this great snippet that he sent me of a birthday party that he was having at his house. And it was one of those moments that all dads are ashamed of, but it's like, it's the thing that ties us all together. And there's this happy birthday moment, you know, David's filming it, and one of his boys like picks up a balloon and he's like pointing it right at the camera. And, you know, you think, oh, whatever. And he flips it and it hits David. And then you hear this, ah! And then the whole screen moves and shuts down. And that's why I'm having David on the show. Because anybody who can share a moment like that is okay in my book.
Yeah.
Well, you know, since this is a book about college, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of your college background and what you do now? Because I know the dads are going to be interested.
Yeah. So thanks, Todd. Yeah. So essentially, you know, for many years, I felt this calling to write this book about helping kids find hope and kind of a purpose for a college experience. And, you know, for many years, I just thought about it and prayed about it and didn't do anything about it until another author told me once, you know, the difference between, you know, a lot of people have ideas for books, but very few people actually write them. So you need to just get started writing them. And so I jumped in and just set aside a couple hours every week for like a year and a half to write this book. It was definitely a labor of love and took a lot of discipline. But the reason I really felt compelled to write is because I feel like I've had most educational experiences that people might experience. I've been blessed to be at a top 20 school. I've been at a Big Ten school. I went to seminary and I went to an Ivy League school and also took some kind of co-op evening classes in between there.
That's a lot of school.
And so I feel like I've been in all those different contexts, Todd, which really promote kind of a holistic understanding of the educational experience and how people can walk through that journey and the different pressures and opportunities people face in those different contexts. And so that adds a lot to why I wrote the book. And then what I do now, so we have home healthcare companies. We take care of older adults in their homes. We specifically really focus on helping people finish well and creating active and engaged lives through exceptional care. So we're in multiple states. We have about 600 employees who work with us across those offices, have about four offices, and really focused on getting at people's hearts and helping them provide support and care in their home setting when they thought they'd never have to have help. So that's what we do now.
And for those listeners who were at the Family Man Rally a couple years ago, Senior Home Companions was one of our sponsors. So we are thankful for that as well. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe since, again, when I first read parts of your book, the beginning of your book, I was really struck, I guess, by the realness of it. You know, this is not just written like, you know, you thought, oh, I should do a book on college for college people. This came out of your own experience. What was your college experience like?
Yeah, so I think we do a really nice job, Todd, at least from what I can see. And I'm living through this right now. My son is a junior. So we're doing a field study right now. If what I wrote is actually still relevant to teens.
Yeah, you'll rip up this book and throw it away when you're done. You know that,
right?
with that field study.
Exactly. So what I feel like, you know, what we do is we often tee kids up really well with extracurriculars and academics for college. Like, we help them kind of get there and think through the choices and land this kind of perfect college. And then we send them off and hope they do well. And oftentimes what happens is that young adults feel a real sense of loss and just kind of ask these big questions in life of, who am I? What am I doing? What is my purpose? And what's all this activity for? But, you know, there's such a rush of activity to kind of get them out the door and get them to college that all those deeper questions often get lost, you know, over this kind of frenzied activity to get somebody ready and off and make a perfect college decision. And so my experience was not dissimilar. I found myself at Vanderbilt in this top 20 school that I worked really hard. I was getting straight A's. Like, I was involved. I had leadership roles. And all of a sudden I had this huge epiphany. Like, why am I doing this? What's the point? What is God calling me to? Mm-hmm. I feel like I have a perfect roadmap. I know how to achieve success in this life. But I just really don't feel that I don't feel like I'm having an impact. And so just a really tough journey. I ended up transferring schools to IU. And I felt very lonely and isolated in that process. And again, felt like my whole support system that I had built for so many years was gone, and just felt very alone. And it was a really tough period in life for me. And I feel like a lot of college kids and young adults go through that. And sometimes it happens in high school, sometimes it's college or after college, but they often go through this really challenging period of despair and darkness of, who am I and why am I doing this? And what's the point to all of life? So I was blessed to have just some really good people to walk through that with me and to be able to just experience some real depth in those emotions and some really hard times. And so hopefully my story encourages other people and provides some insight and some hope as to how to walk through that in a really authentic way.
Well, so, and, you know, your first part of your book is, you know, the pitfalls, because I assume that, you know, when you're feeling all those things, about the worst place you could be in the whole world is in a college setting,
right,
you know,
yeah,
with all these things, you know, I'm just going to pick some of them. You have in chapter 2, owning a piece of you. It says, what does the Bible mean when it talks about idols? What do you mean about that in a college setting?
Yeah. So I think what happens is, you know, you kind of grow up in your family of origin and you just kind of adopt often what the family's doing. If you have a strong family that's committed, you kind of just kind of meld to the family culture that you're used to. And all of a sudden you can wake up in college and realize you're pursuing things that may not be godly, right? And I think that's true of any stage of life, right? You think about the Bible and they're always, you know, it's one of the commandments. One of the primary commandments is, have no other gods before me. And it's so easy to make these idols. Romans, you know, 1 and 2 talk about it, just how we can set up good things that become God things. And so I think, but the challenge with young adults is you may not realize it, right? You may just be kind of doing what everyone tells you to do. There's so much pressure to get into the right school and to pick the major and to figure out what your life is supposed to be like, that you may not realize you're chasing after these idols in a way that really won't benefit you long term and really isn't honoring God in the short term either with your life. And so I think the first step, that's why this book is written this way, is just to call out the idols. Like, what are the most appealing and the most alluring idols that young adults can fall into and can just find themselves blindly following without ever thinking about it?
Well, your first one that you mentioned is people pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? I mean, I know what you mean by that, but everybody else knows what you mean by that. But what do you mean by that?
Right. I think the challenge is that often, you know, you can just fall into this trap of doing what everybody else thinks you should do. And you feel like a lot of pressure to just be in the right crowd in high school. And that continues into college with the whole, if you do a Greek system or fraternity or sorority, and you feel this pressure to just delight and get recognition from people around you. And so it can be so alluring just to continue to do that, right? Just to live your life for the praise of other people and frankly of other men, right? Or women, not necessarily God's praise, but just those around you. And so it can really catch young adults up and just thinking it's a popularity contest, or they have to be in the right small group to achieve the right grades or the right extracurricular activities. And it can just be really just challenging for kids to stay in that place of people pleasing. So you got to recognize it. Maybe all people please, as you know, and it doesn't go away. And there's something honoring in it too, to just be thoughtful about those around you. But it's when it takes over control of your life and becomes more powerful than it, that it can be challenging.
All right. Well, yeah. And your next one, and I've got a question for you after a couple of these, the next idol you have is your future vocation. How does that become an idol?
Yeah. So I think that, and this is, when I was in college, I felt like I had my life complete 100% mapped out. I literally knew the consulting group I was going to work with after Vanderbilt. I knew exactly what extracurricular activities I need to have to. Then I knew when I was going to go to business school, and then I was going to, I had the kind of the company mapped out that I wanted to buy and lead. And it can,
The difference between David Morgan and Todd Wilson. Todd Wilson didn't know what he was going to have for dinner that night, but I was thinking about it, and that was about as far as I got ahead. So go ahead, keep going, David.
So I think what happens though is it can become an idol when you get into these high pressure environments, in colleges that are, around other driven kids. You feel like you have to figure it out, and whether you really have it figured out or don't, you feel like you need to. And so it can become this idol that you bow down to. I'll never forget just the number of interviews I did in undergraduate and grad programs. You literally feel like you're on this just interview cycle just to continue to network and find opportunities. And all of it is because you're idolizing, hey, the end goal of college is to get this ideal job that really tees me up for success and for the future. Mm. And the reality is no job is going to fulfill you, right? I share a story in there of a great employee that we had for many years, and she was so dedicated and loyal. And I finally told her at one point, I was like, this job can't be your all. Like, it can't satisfy you. And you're giving your entire heart to this career, and it's just going to let you down. Like, it's a job. You got to look for other things beyond that. But it's hard not to, because you feel like you're working hard, and that is the bow at the end of the college experience. Where are you working? That's what everybody's going to ask, and where they want to know what you're doing. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, maybe the next one is your achievements. So maybe that kind of ties into those same things, but maybe you'd elaborate on those.
Yeah, it's you can just really get young adults can feel, and it starts early. You basically, freshman and sophomore year, if you're at a college prep high school or even preparing to college, you're asked to kind of put together a resume, like figure out exactly what extracurricular activities you're doing and why you're doing them, and how they're going to lead to the result that you want to lead. So you can really focus on achievements and just your sense of accomplishment. Nancy Fitzgerald has written a lot on kind of worldviews, and she just says this is absolutely one of the biggest areas that young adults can fall prey to, thinking it's all about their achievements and not about their relationships, right? You can go through life and accomplish a lot, but if you do so with a wake of destruction and form relationships behind you, it probably wasn't God honoring. So just being really thoughtful about how you're doing your, how you're prioritizing achievements. God wants us to achieve. He wants us to, he created work. It's a good thing. But he also wants us to prioritize relationships, and how we're going about that work is really significant. Mm-hmm.
Well, David, as I'm listening to you, because I think of all the dads listening, how do you think we as parents, we fan that? Yeah. All those things, because honestly, I had a dad who used to say to me, I would bring straight A's home from, from high school, whatever. And he would say to me, he'd say, that's pretty good. He said, but will your teacher say you're the nicest kid in the class? Yeah. And to him, that was so important, to be the nicest kid in class. And so, as I kind of progressed through that, I didn't feel as much pressure, but I know a lot of dads who feel that pressure. I know a lot of kids, and we homeschool our kids, and I know you've homeschooled your kids at times, and maybe in the homeschooling process, that pressure even starts earlier. You know, these kids are in like fourth grade and they're going, you know, well, you know, maybe you'd make a good engineer and we need to start thinking on that engineer track. And I'm thinking, man, that is a lot of pressure. Do you think we dads some, because that's who you're talking to right now. Yeah. You think sometimes we do that to our children? And could we, is there a way that we can alleviate some of that maybe by the way we interact with our kids?
Yeah. I mean, I think we dads do it without even saying anything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Star Wars, right? Or any movie, there are these father son themes that are really, really strong and just perpetuate even secular culture. And so like our sons are going to look up to us, whether the relationship is perfect or not, they watch and see what we do. And so I think that's a challenging thing about it, Todd, is that without even saying anything, we leave a big footprint behind us, and every son feels this expectation to kind of live up to what their dad did or to overcome the shortcomings they saw, regardless for an example for them. And so I think you're really right. I mean, obviously we can do it intentionally. And I think that's the challenge of, you know, during the seasons when we've homeschooled our kids, it's you feel the pressure is all on you. You just feel like you're the one responsible for 100% of your kids' development, educationally and extracurricular and athletically, and it can be such a high pressure environment. And so I think stopping in that and trusting God in it and believing that he has a plan for your kid, he knows the plans he has for your kids, plans to prosper them and not to harm them, plans to give them a hope and a future. And I love what Henry Nouwen wrote when he said, you know, I really view kids as like we're extending hospitality even to our kids. Like they are God's first, they are our second. And so often we can really fall prey to thinking it's all on our shoulders, and to put that pressure on our kids to outperform us or to live vicariously. If we wanted to be good at football or whatever, to really help our kids be good at football. And so just having that heart attitude of trusting in God for our kids' future and giving them their own wings, but also not putting too much pressure on them, really viewing them as guests in our house for a period of time that we're called to shepherd and mentor and help hear God's voice in their life, but not put so much pressure and overbearing responsibility on them.
Because we even do that, don't you think, in small ways. I mean, when we say, I mean, because, and I had this conversation with my mom, my dad, you know, would often say when I would go and speak somewhere or I write for somebody, that he'd say, well, are they paying you for that? And I always took it as, you know, like the value that he put was on whether I got paid or not. Right. And so if I didn't get paid or I didn't get paid enough, I felt like, oh, then it wasn't valuable, you know, and I find myself even doing that to my own kids, you know, like, well, how much can you sell that for, you know, right. And, you know, kind of passing that on. Now, my mom said, she said, why do you do it? And I said, well, because I want them to, you know, be able to pay their bills and whatever. And she said, that's why your dad does it, too. And so that was a good insight. But do you think we do that in small ways when we say, you know, you got to get your resume in now and you got to get in first, because if you don't, you're not going to get in there. And if you don't get in there, you know, and we, you know, almost like we think that it's up to us to get them where they need to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, James talks about, right, faith without actions is dead, right? And so it's this balancing act when you're a dad of you are often the primary motivator for the family. Like, I know my wife is way better at organization and making it all happen, but I'm often the one who brings the energy and gets things moving. And so we have to be so mindful of that, right? We want our kids to have faith. We want them to have a sincere belief in God, but we also want them to take meaningful actions and purposeful steps in their life to kind of make stuff happen. And so you're exactly right, though, how we're prioritizing our time. I mean, our kids watch it. They see what stresses us out, right? And what gives us joy. And if we can really reflect a Christ-like attitude in those moments, it's going to be speak so much louder than what we say. So it feels like, and Todd, you're an expert on this, but I feel like
I'm not. I'm a loser at it, actually, but that's okay.
Is to keep them talking, right? And so, like, you may, you know, I used to have this thing called a work call, and every Saturday I would give my kids a list of what they needed to do. And I thought it was fun. I was like, hey, we're going to rally around this. Everybody's going to have lists. And my kids just, like, they did it for a while, and then they just started hating it. They're like, what's the list this Saturday? And how early do we have to get up and do this today? And so we just started talking about it. And so as a result of those conversations, like they still do chores and stuff around the house, but it's not called work call anymore. And it's not me driving it in an hour and a half period every Saturday morning. And so I flexed right. it to basically meet where they were at with it. So.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Just to keep talking, because I have a pastor that I work for, and he would work incredible hours. He would get at the office at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he would just work all night long. And he told me one time that he said, you know, he goes, I had a dad who just always, if I was ever resting, he would say I was lazy. Mm. And he turned it into a ministry ethic, but it really was motivated by a father who said he was lazy. And I think, you know, our words are so, so powerful. But you, hey, you talk about a couple more idols that I kind of bypassed here. You have your indulgences and your image. So yeah. Talk about those.
Yeah. So your indulgences, obviously college is a time that often people experiment with, you know, drugs and substances or alcohol or things that they haven't done in the past. And so it's just really easy to caught up with those. And there's a culture that really breeds that. I'll never forget just, you know, I was in a fraternity and I was often kind of the sober monitor. And so I would just watch this all happen. And it was crazy to see just how, you know, it seemed exciting in the moment and people would have fun that night and then just helping them the next morning. And it was so sad just to see how it didn't work out, right? It seemed fun in the moment, but they often had this feeling of shame and regret and just what happened. And so I think it's just your indulgences. You can live for them, right? Live for the party scene. You can live for the connection scene. And it can become really alluring and fun for a while. And then you wake up and you're like, what have I done? And I'm on my fifth year of college and I need to really focus. And so that's just a reality, right? Just one thing to be aware of in college. Is that's kind of the obvious one.
You're questioning things, mm-hmm. it would be easy for a good kid to be caught up into something.
Right.
But they never really... You know, that wasn't part of their life plan. You're just there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's there. And then the image thing is really true. I think this is really hard too with social media now and just how prolific just kids are on their phones and connected with their friends. You can really fall down to this idea that you have to have a perfect life, that you have these perfect images of yourself that go out for your friends. And if you're not having cool and in-depth experiences that are fun and look beautiful, then you're out of the loop. And so I think this idea of your image really extends and has gotten complicated by just the social networking scene right now. And it can be all about that, right? You can work out a ton and you can, you know, e-ride and just really get your path focused on your own image and how you look to other people. And that can
be- and it still doesn't work. I mean, you'll see, you know, everybody's like, you know, being so kind when whoever posts whatever and they say, oh, what a beautiful person. But I know those words are hollow and you say to yourself, that's not true. You know, and even if you work out and you look amazing, you mm-hmm. still, you just can't get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it kind of, you lead in chapter 8 about the mirage. And I assume, you know, as you're talking about all these things, the mirage is just what it says.
Right. Yeah. It's just, again, the idea is that young adults can just fall into one of these kind of 7 pitfalls in a way that they don't even realize, right? They just kind of fall into this and they start living for their friends or they start focusing on their image. And often it's like a combination. I love what C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters, I think it's really appropriate to read with young adults because, you know, he's writing from the perspective of this demon trying to influence the patient who is the Christ follower. You know, and he just says through all, he just shows how tricky, like Satan is a master of deceit. And his goal is to deceive our young adults into falling into one of these 7 categories or other or some blend of them. And he's really, really good at it. And he's good at making you think it's your own thought system or it's good to follow these things. So again, none of these things are necessarily bad, right? It's not bad to work out and focus on your body. It's not bad to think about others around you and please them. It's not bad to try and get a great job and do something really cool with your career. It's just when these things get elevated and become the focus to the exclusion of Christ and relationships, that's when young adults can really find themselves empty and isolated and alone and kind of questioning.
Well, you know, and then you go into part 2, making hope practical. And I mean, good stuff all the way through. And this is really, the book is written for the student going through it right now. But as a dad, how would we, you know, because you have like chapter 11 is believe in Christ. The next chapter is pursue the Father, seek out the Spirit. 14, create balance, and 15, lock arms. How as dads can we encourage our kids in those areas? I know, I mean, one would be to buy your book, you know, Delivering Your Future, and handing it to them, which is a great, that I think that would be a great place to start. But how can we do that, you know, as we're talking to them on the phone or when they show up to do their laundry at our house?
Yeah, I mean, I think the huge thing about all of this is just that, you know, I hate books that are not practical. And so I really tried hard to make this book practical. So the first part is just, you know, all about kind of contextualizing it. And then it moves in the second half to really getting practical. I think you need a tee up in the beginning to really get the meat out of the second half of the book. But it gets very, very practical just in terms of helping your young adult walk through what do they want to do next. And these are skills that I learned like in a top 10 business school, right? How do you like network? How do you like ask questions about what you should do? How do you get in front of somebody in an area that you're interested in? And so, you know, a lot of what we can do as dads is model this stuff, right? I mean, that's half the deal is just modeling these things to our sons. So, you know, locking arms is, I think, one of the chapters I enjoy the most, just about creating community around you. And if we're not meeting with guys, like as dads, if we don't really have like a tribe or, you know, there are other ways to describe it, but guys who have our backs and we're not prioritizing that, then how do we ever expect our kids to do that? Like, how are they going to really intentionally seek out a support system that's going to be there when maybe we can't be there in ways that we're not able to?
Well, how do you do that? That locking arms, how do you do that in a college scene? Especially, I assume, you know, because, you know, it's like it's starting all over. You're right. Thrust into this place and they're going, you know, people are starting to throw out, oh, you should go to the whatever house. And you're like, I don't know what the whatever house is. How do you even do that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's it can be really intimidating to do just because it may be kind of outside the norm. But I think, you know, college ministries are an awesome way to do this. Like Greek University, Campus Crusade, Reform University Fellowship. I mean, you kind of have to figure out, and this is where parents can really help because you can kind of do a little bit of networking with other parents behind the scenes before your kids get there and figure out where are the places my young adult can plug in when they get there. And you can help them feel like it's their idea, not your idea, right? So you can just, or have the, you know, if you have another family that's at that college and they have a son there or a daughter, you can ask them what they've done to encourage their faith to have been there and then have that kid suggest it to your son or daughter.
Well, I know I've even had people, I have a brother who's on crusade, it was at Purdue and they would say, hey, my daughter's at Purdue. Cause they contact, really try to contact all the freshmen. And so I was able to, you know, pass on that name, that where they live. And he made a contact just like he always does. But it was specific, you know.
Yeah. No, that's the key. I'll never forget. Yeah, when I went to IU, my mom started networking like crazy. She's so nervous for me to give a Big Ten.
Did you get to the point where you're like, my mom told you to do this, didn't you?
I was like, I don't know if I want to do it because mom found this. But at the same time, I ended up meeting with this guy in Greek IV, and he mentored me for 2 years and really helped me wrestle through some of these things. And it was amazing. And I wouldn't have found it without my mom stepping in and helping me make that connection. And so, you know, if sometimes I think our role as parents is to provide the information, and even if they don't act on it, kind of at least in the back of their minds, they know the connection's there. And when they see the sign on campus or connect with it via social media, they may be apt to kind of show up at it if we provide the connection points or at least the jumping point to get them involved in things.
Well, David, we're going to run out of time here. I don't want to take any more of your time, but maybe a couple closing thoughts that you could give us. You know, because some of these things, even as you, in the beginning of your book, you're kind of telling your story, you know, from the outside, nobody knows that, you know, as a dad, they watch and they look like, hey, he's putting out the grades. They seem like they're involved. How can we begin to probe? Maybe that's not the right word. Maybe that's not the right word, but how can we begin that conversation with our kids?
Yeah. I mean, I think two things you've written about, Todd, that I really resonate with is just the one-on-one time with your kids, and it won't feel efficient. Like you talked one time about this drive time with your kids and just being aware when you have that one-on-one time. And that's huge. And sometimes like your kid may not say anything until the last 2 minutes you're together and you see something or have an experience that really connects the dots with all of it. And so I think that just pursuing, being intentional, and it's really hard to do with a family if you have multiple kids, to grab that one-on-one time, but even if it's a walk or a car ride somewhere, I'm just trying to enter into that space where you have some one-on-one time. Because I feel like I know my kids, they're not going to say much if their brother's around, but if you get them one-on-one,
right.
They're willing to talk. So
and sometimes you can even use like this conversation. Like I know one time I was listening to something and I said to one of my kids, I said, hey, I was listening to this and this guy said this, do you ever feel that way? You know? And he was like, well, maybe a little. And I'm like, really? Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I think as dads, like we often wait till we have it perfect or we want to have it, or we don't think our advice is as good, or we're not sure how to approach it. But I mean, even if you fumble through it, like it's better than not saying anything. So just throw out a question or share something from your own experience or bring out a topic, but don't be afraid. God's put you in a position of leadership in your family with your kids for the season. And so step into it, throw out the question, even if it's awkward. There are questions in the back of each one of these chapters that are great, that can be jumping off points, or even just taking some of the topics can help you kind of get started with that question. But just encourage other dads to be intentional and jump in there and don't be afraid.
Okay, and how about our last question here? And then maybe you can tell them where they can get a hold of you or hear more and get your book. What about the dad who's listening right now? And he's like, David, you know, I'm not in college, but I feel all those things. You know, I feel like I'm fighting against all that right now. You know, what about me?
Yeah. So I think the funny thing about this book is I wrote it and put like a college title on it, and all my kind of friends and people I know started to read it and they're like, oh, this is so relevant. Like I can't have a quote in there. Everything you own owns a piece of you. It's from a mentor from Chad Johnson. And like, I just keep hearing that from people because it still seems really relevant at any stage of life. Cause I feel like the reality is we're all trying to figure out what our future is at different stages. And we're looking to God to provide that insight and direction at different points. And so it really does have relevant themes and topics that come up at any aspect of life and will be helpful to have people kind of think about. So,
They're going to want your book. So where can they find it?
Yeah. So you go on Amazon, Delivering Your Future is the name of it, Delivering Your Future, or we have a website, deliveringyourfuture.org. I'd be happy to connect with you. And there are ways to get connected and buy the book and hopefully encourages you and just starts to help you have these conversations with your sons and daughters in a way that's meaningful at a really significant time. They need your leadership. They need your insight. Even if they may not act like they want it, they still are watching you and looking at what you're doing. So.
Well, I wrote down your comment and I'll probably turn it into a meme where it says, you know, even if you fumble through it, it's better than saying nothing. And I just think that's awesome. Well, David, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day. And we'll have to have you on the show again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Well, Scott, you know, I was encouraged from point of view of a dad. And I know there are a lot of dads listening whose kids are right in college right now, and maybe they're facing some of that. And I think, you know, maybe we start the conversation, just like I said, that we say to them, hey, do you feel any of these things? Or maybe we get the book and we give it to them and say, hey, what'd you think of the book? You know, after they, you know, looked at it or skimmed it or thumbed through it. But again, I was just struck by really this begins when our kids are really, really little. And if we, you know, really, if our priorities are wrong, and which they often are, we are going to pass them right on to our children. And I think, you know, we do them a great service when we kind of readjust ourselves and even have to do it intentionally. And, you know, I say to myself all the time, okay, I'm not going to ask, are you getting paid? I'm not going to ask these things just because I don't want, you know, even though the motives are right, as I heard from my mom, you know, his motives were good, but somehow we as kids, we don't take it as that we don't care about the motives, you know? So I was encouraged.
Me too, except when he started stepping on my toes and telling me I have to do stuff too. I'm like, you mean I gotta be a better person too? Oh man.
Can't I just give them the book?
Exactly. I want to just be able to give them a book and have my kids turn out right.
Yep. You know, really. And dad, you know, and we'll just kind of close here. It doesn't matter what age it is, it's all hard. It's hard if your kids are little and if your kids are big. And I think that just the important thing is to not give up. And as David said, just to keep talking. You know, I've got kids in there right now that are, you know, going through that transition and emotion and everything. And sometimes it just feels hard. But I don't give up. And I go back in, even if I've blown it, which we blow it often, and we apologize and we say, do you know how much I love you? And then we talk some more and then we blow it again and start all over again. And that's what it's all about, Charlie Brown. So, Dad, have a great weekend. I hope you're still having a little bit of warm weather to enjoy some maybe post-summer things. Campfires are starting to sound good. And encourage your kids in what really, really matters. And do it because you to Dad.
And that's our show for this week, Dad. Thanks for joining us for the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. If you have a question for the show, email Todd at familyman@familymanweb.com. If you have a question for me, you can reach me at scott@unsocializedmedia.com. Thanks for joining us, Dad. Have a great week.
Send him a link in just a couple minutes.
Oh,
just a couple minutes. Don't do that. That really lowers our professional value if you do that first thing. Hey, David. I'm sorry. Let me crack open a new one. Mabel, get me another beer.